Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome, you guys. Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I am Laura, and this is Marty.
Hi.
Hi. We are super excited that you guys are here joining us today. And we have a really fun project that we're starting for the month of November. So we're kicking it off a little bit early. We're going to do a month of giving thanks for our pets. I know, isn't that fun? And since it's also the whole month of November is about giving, each week we're going to drop a link to another really cool organization that you guys can give some money to if you are so compelled. This week, we're kind of transitioning from October to November. So we're going to talk about Pink Paw. Marty's going to give us a little bit of information about this really great program that she's advocating for breast cancer awareness in our pets. So,
yeah, so there's a lot to talk about here. And we actually did a full webinar on it. So if you want to get the whole story, you can hop onto the Revival website and they will have that posted by probably the second week of November. So it doesn't go up right away. We did it on October 15th, and it takes a little time to process it and do all the magical stuff that they do. But essentially, Pink Paw is breast cancer awareness for pets. And yes, dogs and cats also get breast cancer. It's not just people. And so I encourage people every month, women, every month when they check themselves for breast cancer, which you need to do every month, check your lymph nodes, check your mammary glands. There's all kinds of instructions online to figure out how to do it. I just looked it up the other day. But you should also be checking all your girls, all the girl dogs and cats in your house. And it's very simple. We don't do mammograms on dogs and cats. All you have to do is find their little nipples, and they should have five sets, five pairs. The fifth glands are the ones closest to the tail, and the first one is closest to the armpit. One, two, three, four, five. Sometimes there's extra nipples. Sometimes there's fewer nipples. Some dogs will have five on one side and four on the other. It's not any stress. Yeah, it happens. But all you need to do is lay your females on their back. So when they're on the couch and you're hanging out, watching TV or whatever you do, grooming them, whatever you're doing, just go up their mammary chain and very gently roll their tissues through your fingers. And if you feel anything that feels firm that isn't a nipple, then you need to contact your veterinary clinic and have them assess that. Now, oftentimes this means surgery because the needle aspiration test that we do, the FNA or fine needle aspiration that we do on a lot of lumps on dogs and cats is not accurate for mammary tumors because they tend to be a mixed tumor type. So you're not going to get a full assessment of what's going on if you do a needle aspirate. But essentially you go in, if your veterinarian says, oh, it's soft and squishy and it feels like a lipoma, don't worry about it. Cool, go home. If they say, oh yeah, this is concerning, then have it taken off. I have a lot of people that say, well, I'm just going to watch it. And I say to them, watch it what? Watch it get bigger? Watch it metastasize? Watch it get so big that we can't remove it? No, don't watch it. Get it taken off when it's small. Now, there's a lot of controversy on whether you should take the whole mammary chain or just one mammary gland or just the lump. That's for you and your vet to figure out, but go in, get a veterinary assessment, and learn about that. So number one, early detection is going to save lives. Number two, we have very little research on dogs and cats for anything that's effective other than surgery. We don't have good imaging. We don't have good chemotherapy or radiation for mammary tumors because most of them get treated at the local veterinary clinic level, never get to an oncologist, so they don't have any cases to do this with. So we are working really hard with the University of Wisconsin to develop this research project that does two things. One is it's going to fund the research on detection, and if there's a DNA test or if there's some other kind of test that we can do that will predict that the dog is going to have a problem. And number two, once we have that information, are there targeted therapies, immunotherapy, chemotherapy? What kind of treatments can we offer the dogs besides surgical removal? So it's great if surgery takes care of it, but many times it's already metastasized and it's more serious than that.
Right. Excellent. Well, listeners, we will have on the website in the show notes, there will be a link that if you choose to give as the kickoff to your month of giving in November and Thanksgiving and all the rest of it, we will have that for you there.
So we have the pink
beautiful
paw.
Pendant, the pink paw pendant.
We have the pink paw pendant that if you do decide that you want to support this with purchasing this, we're selling them only through the veterinary clinic in Lamira, Veterinary Village. So you can go to our website, smallanimalclinic.com, and you can get one of those ordered. They run $200, and a proceeds of that will go to the fund. So we need to get mammary tumors sent to the University of Wisconsin so that they have the tumors that they can do research on. We need to get them funding to help with researching additional things, because the last research that was done on this that really told us anything was in 1969. Yeah. So that was a long time ago, and we really don't have any breakthroughs that have happened. So they need the funding. They need the support. So it's the University of Wisconsin Companion Animal Excellence in Mammary Cancer Research. That's the name of the fund, the whole name of it, but affectionately called Pink Paw for short. So there's a lot of good information out there, but early detection and then supporting the research are really important things. If you go to the groomer and the groomer finds a lump, if you feel anything, like I said, just trot into your veterinary clinic, get some help, make sure that it's taken care of, and get those taken care of right away. And don't wait, because all waiting does is get you into trouble.
Excellent. Okay. There's our PSA for today, y'all. And so as we move into November, and I think this is a month that's always been really impactful for me on just kind of personal levels. And I always work really hard to do that, you know, one grateful thing a day, right? Like it kind of helps me get through the gray, dreary days in Oregon and kind of life and stuff. So,
well, at least you're not freezing your tail off.
No, it almost never gets below freezing here. So I do love that. I do love that. That's why I live here, not with you, dear. So back in July, what I kind of settled on for this month, back in July, we talked about the human-animal bond, right? The Human-Animal Bond Research Institute, all that stuff. And so I decided that this month we're going to highlight the thanks that we give for our pets and the fact that they just exist in our lives. So we thought we'd start each show with a fun story, a personal story about why I'm grateful for my pets. And so today I'm picking on Ruthie, aka Ruthless, who makes me laugh like out loud every single day, which I'm not necessarily always in a great humor, but no matter what, Ruthie can make me laugh. She flings herself through the house. She picks up a toy. She bounces off. You know, she's just effervescent. And sometimes everybody needs a little effervescence in their life.
Yes, something lighthearted and entertaining. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How about you, Marty? You got one?
Oh, gosh. You know, I...
You can save yours for next week.
No, I'm good. Okay. I have been able to blend in a really unique way all the things I do professionally and all the things that I do for hobbies and fun. Mm-hmm. So I have to say that that's been a gift, a real blessing for me is, yeah, I get to take my dogs to work. I have a dog that's due to have a litter of puppies today, and she was at work with me yesterday. We're at home today, just, you know, waiting for the puppies to be born. But she was able to go to work with me. The puppies will go to work with me, and I've been able to work with breeders. Mm-hmm. And part of being a breeder veterinarian is working with breeder clients, and part of being someone that works with breeder clients is being a breeder. And so the two worlds have blended really great professionally and socially for us. We go to dog shows. We have a fun time. You know, we've been able, I think as of this week, we've finished 16 Danish British farm dogs this year.
That's great.
And that's just from the first of the year. So that's really cooking. But we can only do it because of, we go to a dog show with too many dogs. And I turn around and I look across the building and I'm like, oh, I know you and I know you and I know you. And would you like
to take a dog in the ring for me?
Yeah. So they help take a dog in the ring with us. They help us learn things. Everything I learned that I share with breeder clients are almost all things that I've learned from other breeders and from the experiences that I've had working with their dogs. So, you know, you don't come out of veterinary school. You don't just pop out of vet school one day as a veterinarian that really understands all this stuff. It's an evolution. And so over the course of the time, I've been able to evolve into someone that can do both. I actually talked to a client about 2 years ago that was a Revival Animal Health client, And on the phone, she says to me, "You veterinarians don't understand anything about us breeders." And I went, "Oh, baby, back up the train, because you are talking to the wrong chick here." Yeah. I, too, am up in the middle of the night with sick puppies. I, too, am up in the middle of the night whelping. I, too, tube feed every 2 hours. So don't tell me your sad story that I don't understand you, because that's really very unfair to say those things.
No matter what our pets bring us, like it brings you the joy to bring together your personal and social. I happen to have a variety of dog personalities in my household, so each one of them brings me something. I thought that today, the interesting topic that we could dig into, so you and I have kind of touched on it at other times and other places, talking about the pros and cons of our culture here in the U.S. particularly, that really considers pets as family members, which, you know, there's a lot of pros to that, but I think there's some potential areas of concern that we should just kind of think about as pet owners. Let's kind of take that from the top. Let's talk about some of the pros, the way you see them. You interact with pet owners on a daily basis, and our dogs are our family. I mean, I am not a person who refers to them as my fur children, but they're my kids. They're my family. They're who I spend my time with. And I think that's true for a lot of people. So talk us through that.
Right. And so, yes, the terms fur baby, we don't refer to ourselves as mom and dad of the dogs. And that becomes a point of friction for a lot of us. I'll pick up the phone and talk to a referring veterinary clinic that, for instance, is the oncology department or the surgery department or whatever. And they'll say, "Well, mom and dad." And I'm like, owners, they're owners. And I hate to sound harsh about that line, but it's really important that we do make that distinction. The term guardian, the term mom and dad, the term fur kids, all those things are starting to lead us down the path of, yes, turning these dogs into something more than animals and more than property. And I see them as property, and I know a lot of people are offended by that, but I think the reality is we have to find something in the middle because they're not a coffee table. They're not a coffee
table. They're not a toaster.
They're not a toaster. They're a living being, but they're also not a human living being. And I think that there has to be some place in the middle that we come to terms with this, because there's going to be some real concerns over the course of the next couple of decades for what actually happens. Because if you turn into the guardian for your dog, and you are now in a position that you have to decide between buying a car seat for your newborn and buying a surgical procedure for your dog that tore a cruciate, and you choose the newborn's car seat over the dog, you could end up with legal issues if we go down the path that this dog becomes part of your family. And I want to be really clear. I mean, I went to law school. I want to be really clear about
this. Why I wanted to talk to you about this, because you are such exactly the right combination of someone who has a legal degree, has a veterinary degree, and works with the National Animal Interest Alliance in this area of some of the legislative and other issues where this could really turn into something that people need to be aware of.
Right. There was a case just in the past few weeks that there was a dog that was killed crossing the street on a leash with the owner. The owner escaped being injured badly. The dog was killed. And it's a really serious tragedy when that happens. And the person was definitely in harm's way, which puts them in a different category. But for instance, you want to call somebody a family member, but you're not married yet to this person. Say you're engaged to the person. And on the way to the church, your fiance is killed in an accident. And you are not yet married, they are not part of your family. So there's very distinct legal lines that have been established already. If they'd made it to the church and you were married and they were killed in that accident, that would be a whole different conversation. And so that dog, even though it was on the end of the leash and she was in harm's way, and there's no question that that's dangerous and that's bad, we can't call that dog a family member because you would not have been married to the dog. It would not be your child. It would not be your spouse. It would not be a grandparent. It would not be an aunt or an uncle. They are not in your immediate family. And so that's where this gets to be really confusing. And I think it's been all this black and white stuff, and we've never come to the determination that there's some kind of middle ground. And for the last 15 years, I've been saying there has to be somewhere in the middle that we have a being that's alive, that's different than your toaster, but is technically not a human, so it's not part of your family. There's been all kinds of cases that people have tried to bring elephants or dolphins or other creatures into this category of humans. And we have to be really careful as a society, because if we cross into that line, we're going to end up with some very serious issues. For instance,
I was going to say, give me a for example. This is the deep dive here.
Right. So if your pet becomes your child and the veterinarian makes a medical mistake and they can be sued because of the medical mistake, and it is your child, not your pet, that's going to change the settlement amount of money. That's going to change the emotional settlements. There's all kinds of things that are going to change. And if that happens, your veterinary costs and your veterinary malpractice insurance is going to go through the roof. Everybody's already concerned about the price of veterinary care and how high it's gotten in the last few years because of the cost of labor and the difficulty to get staff and all the things that have changed during and after COVID. So if we see that next step happen, that that dog becomes your kid, your child, and it's technically in your family, you're not going to be able to afford veterinary care because the cost of the veterinary care is going to be equal to the human care, and we're not going to have any way that people can afford those kinds of things. So, you know, veterinarians don't want to have it both ways. They don't want to be able to leverage you and say, well, you should do this procedure because this is like your child. We don't want to be accused of that. But we want to be sure that we're addressing the fact that we are sort of the other family doctor, because we are part of your family healthcare, but dogs are dogs and cats are cats and humans are humans. And we can't blur that line to the point that we end up with legal and financial ramifications that we're going to never be able to unring the bell.
Right.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
My take on it, right? Like my hot take, everybody's got a hot take. My hot take is, from a training perspective, when we treat our dog who has dog tendencies, because it's a carnivore and it's a this and it's a that and it's a pack animal, when we treat it like a human and do not provide it with the actual amazing respect that is due a dog who is a dog, we start getting the behavioral problems that we get.
Right. Right. Because dogs really do have to be treated as dogs. And, you know, you can dress them up, you can let them sleep in your bed, but underneath those little furry lips, there's still canine teeth.
Yeah.
And if a dog bites your kid, a dog bites your neighbor, if something happens, your cat scratches the post office worker, you still have issues. So we have to understand that dogs are dogs and cats are cats, and that's where that line has to be drawn. So I don't know how long it's going to take us to figure out that there should be another category. I've never heard anybody really talk about it. But I really feel like we should be addressing that. There has to be some kind of things that happen to make this all work.
And again, it goes to, I mean, now we're back to the legal piece. If the dog equals a human and you want to put your dog down for behavioral euthanasia, for example, now are we committing murder?
Like, exactly.
There's just some really big, like, I'm talking big scale, and this is even a deeper dive than I was thinking, but big scale, like ethical and moral civilization level conversations that start to come into play here.
Right, right. It's going to get real fuzzy and real confusing if we're not careful. So, you know, I don't want to make this sound all doom and gloom and heavy and scary, but you have to have a little bit of this information in your head when you're thinking about what those things all mean. We have a lot of clients that have dogs, they're commercial dog breeders, and they don't keep all their dogs in their commercial kennels. They're all put out into people's homes, and they call them guardian homes. And that's a dangerous term, because guardian has legal implications. We have guardian ad litem, and there's a lot of legal ramifications that go with that. So we have to be cognizant of that and watchful. because we don't want to end up in the situations where if your dog is suffering and you have to euthanize it, yeah. If your dog bites somebody, you're absolutely right. When does that become an issue that we don't have the opportunity to do the right thing? Because in my mind, and as hard as it is for me to do this, but if we have a dog that's dangerous for someone to live with and there's just no safe out for it, euthanasia may be the only option. And yes, we put people in jail long term, and every now and then there's someone who's on death row because they couldn't control their behaviors. And it's hard for clients to have to make those decisions. It's hard for veterinarians to be involved in those decisions. But human safety comes first. In my mind, it's always human safety always comes first. The safety of you, your family, your children, your neighbors, everybody comes first. And as hard as it is for me as a veterinarian to say, your dog cannot continue to live in your home, we have to do something and there's no safe other place for this dog to go, euthanasia may be your only option. It has to be a reality of what we have for options.
Right.
It has to be.
You know, we see a lot of legislation across the board, you know, whether it has to do with your ownership, the type of dog you can own, whether you can't get insurance on your house because you own a banned breed. You know, there's a lot of stuff where things are starting to just kind of trickle in a direction that to me feels like we're going to reach an uncomfortable place and have to start, you know, making those kind of hard decisions. Thoughts on
right.
that?
Right. And our normals change every generation, every decade, our normals are changing. So that
dogs that's never lived inside, right? Up until what, the 60s, really? Maybe the 70s? Dogs didn't live in the house. Cats sure the heck didn't live in the house. That wasn't a thing.
Now they sleep under your covers. They don't just live in your house. Well, there's dogs that sleep under the covers. There's dogs that wear clothes every day that people dress up. You know, there's no question that these animals are becoming child substitutes. And if that meets your lifestyle needs, more power to you. I'm not going to be here to tell you what to do or what not to do. But when the legalities start to get involved and, you know, where the rubber hits the road, we're going to start to have some things that are going to be challenging. So, yeah, that's sort of the reality of what the future looks like.
What is your recommendation for people if they want to learn more, if they have, you know, the desire to acquire more information? Would you recommend checking out NAIA? Is that going to be a good resource for them on this topic? Or what do you think?
It is a great resource. Patty Strand and NAIA does a great job. There's a whole website at Michigan Law School that has almost all of the animal laws that are included in the U.S. There are overviews of these things that can happen that you can see online. There's United Kingdom has a legal skills lab and some other things. So there's definitely organizations out there that can be really useful for people to look into more extensively. There is a handful of veterinarians that are both veterinarians and attorneys, not a lot of us, but there's a few. So those are all good resources. And you just have to start kind of looking at those things and being open-minded enough to see both sides of the issue, because we know that there's going to be some difficult lines to straddle here.
Right. And finding reasonable, ethical, moral ways to do that, I think without abandoning or disregarding the societal changes, the cultural changes that have brought us to where we are today, nobody's making fun of anybody, but we want to just be really clear that there can be unintended consequences to some of these decisions.
Right. A lot of the states around the country have an animal law division. So Wisconsin doesn't have one, believe it or not. As agricultural a state as Wisconsin is, we don't have an animal law division, but there are many that do. So if you're an attorney, if you're a veterinarian, there's lots of options. We have the American Veterinary Medical Law Association, which you can be a veterinarian or an attorney or both and join. There's the Society for Veterinary Medical Ethics, which I think is a really great organization. I'm actively involved with them. And it's a great organization for anybody in the veterinary field. You don't have to be a veterinarian. You could be a veterinary technician. But they're a great organization that helps you understand. And Alice Villalobos, who started it, has coined the phrase, instead of compassion fatigue, ethics fatigue. And I think that that's a really important way to look at it. Because, you know, there are definitely healthcare providers, whether they're human or veterinary, that do suffer from some kind of fatigue. And the question is it compassion? Is it just about compassion? Or are you putting your ethical beliefs in a place that you're straddling a line that's making you uncomfortable? So the Society for Veterinary Medical Ethics has a monthly meeting. They have an organization that meets on an annual basis. So there's some really great organizations out there. You know, we've talked about Not One More Vet. And I am of the humble opinion that every organization that employs veterinarians, and that includes the corporate veterinary organizations that own hundreds of veterinary clinics and have hundreds and hundreds of veterinaries and veterinary staff that work for them, that they should pay the membership for all of their people to be a member of the Society for Veterinary Medical Ethics and to be a member of the American Vet Med Law Association. Because both of those organizations, and I know everybody here may not be involved in the veterinary group, but they all know veterinarians. They all know people that could benefit from this. So this is something you take back to your vet tech and say, did you know about this? Like, these organizations exist. And as a vet tech, you can join them. You don't have to spend a lot of money to join them. Talk to your boss, talk to the corporation you work for, because we do have corporate level sponsorships for those. So if the corporation they work for is willing to jump in and pay that, then they can be a member. And even if they don't pay for it, they're not expensive memberships for vet techs. Right. So I would encourage anybody here that loves a vet tech, because we all are attached to somebody at our veterinary clinic. There's that person at your vet clinic, the receptionist, the vet tech. There's always this one that you really connected with, or you wouldn't keep going there, right? Mm-hmm. There's that one. Yeah. So you go in and you say, do you know there's these two organizations? It's not just Not One More Vet. There's the Society for Veterinary Medical Ethics and the American Vet Med Law Association. And these organizations are there to help you make legal decisions if you need help, make ethical decisions if you need help, to support you on the backside of your practice, so that if you have a bad day, a bad week, there's people out there you can reach out to that are going to help you without going on Facebook and venting, because that is not a solution to your problems.
Not the solution. Social media is basically the problem, not the solution. Sorry. Sorry, y'all. Just going to,
if you want to put
a, throw down my own opinion on this one. Yeah. Social media.
If you want to put a picture up of what you had for lunch, go for it. But if you really need help, the Facebook and these other organizations are not the place to get the help. There are real, genuine, real live professionals in these organizations that will open their arms to you and help you get through some of these things. We are there to help other people in our profession.
That is amazing. We will have links to all of this stuff in the show notes on the Marty and Laura Show website. Check it out, y'all. Meanwhile,
don't forget,
be grateful.
Don't forget.
Pink paw. Gratitude month is coming up. Think about what you're grateful for. Drop us a note. You can always email me at laura@puredogtalk.com and tell us what you're grateful for, and we'll share it on air. All right. Thanks, Marty.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.